Well, good morning. One of the things I've been mulling over lately is some terminology, how we word things, defining what we think is real and isn't. It's quite common to say this experience is nothing but a dream, it's a dreamscape. However, it's your dreamscape. Is there correct action? Yes. Is there a correct attitude? Yes. Is there a correct meditation? Yes. Is there a correct wisdom? Yes. Even though this is a dreamscape, it's your dreamscape. How are you a master in your own dreamscape? Is the dreamscape tossing you around, or are you lucid dreaming? The other thought that comes up for me around this same sort of topic of what's real and what isn't is this whole notion of non-duality. For me, the term non-duality infers there's a duality. Automatically, when you say non-duality, it's duality. I prefer the saying not to. I think that's a little more direct. But even more direct is just this mind. So later on next year, we're going to be doing a series of the teachings of Hong Po on the transmission of mind. And you'll have an opportunity to join in those with me if you. If you want. But for now, I just want to read a little bit. The master said to me, all the Buddhas and all sentient beings are nothing but the one mind, capital O, capital M, besides which nothing exists. This mind, which is without beginning, is unborn and indestructible. It is not green nor yellow, and has neither form nor appearance. It does not belong to the categories of things which exist or do not exist, nor can it be thought of in terms of new or old. It is neither long nor short, big nor small, for it transcends all limits, measures, names, traces, and comparisons. It is that which you see before you. Begin to reason about it, and you at once fall into error. It is like the boundless void, which cannot be fathomed or measured. The one mind alone is the Buddha, and there is no distinction between the Buddha and sentient beings, but that sentient beings are attached to forms and so seek externally for Buddhahood. By their very seeking, they lose it, for that is using the Buddha to seek the Buddha and using mind to grasp mind. Even though they do their utmost for a full eon, they will not be able to attain it. They do not know that if they put a stop to conceptual thought and forget their anxiety, the Buddha will appear before them. For this mind is the Buddha, and the Buddha is all living beings. It is not the less for being manifested in ordinary beings, nor is it greater for being manifested in the Buddhas. You can conceptually play around in the dreamscape all you want, but until you see what's in right in front of your nose, already you see, already you hear, it's a dream. When we do our walking meditation and we walk, it's a perfect reflection of our minds and the dreamscape. Each step is natural. You're not telling your step to take a step. There's no I telling you to take a step. There's just walking. You're already doing it. You're not having to talk about it, create a theology around it. It just happens. Another thing about the dream. There are some that'll say, well, it doesn't matter. It's just a dream, so it doesn't matter what you do. This rug wouldn't be gray if it didn't matter. I wouldn't be sitting here if it didn't matter. You wouldn't eat when you were hungry if it didn't matter. Of course it matters. Everything matters, but nothing matters. Is and it isn't. What's the difference? Phenomenal experience is just phenomenal experience. It's just, you know, the dreamscape. It's fine. Just do it. You know, don't make it into something. And then also, he says, you know, just let go of your anxiety. So what is it we do here? We come in here to meditate. And what happens when we sit correctly? We lose our anxiety because suchness takes its place. We're just breathing, sitting, being. The perspective we have is more from the so-called mountaintop as opposed to that storm in the teacup that we just came in here with. It's just this. So what is intuition? What is wisdom? Where does it come from? It doesn't come from our conceptualization of how things are. It comes from just gently letting go of our concepts and our ideas of how things are so we can see how they actually are. That's it.
Have you read the Four Agreements?
You know, I think I'm familiar with it, and I don't remember if I actually read the whole thing or just kind of came across it. So tell me a little bit about it.
He talks similarly. He's a Toltec indigenous person.
Yeah.
And he writes this book about four agreements that every person makes, like their soul makes when they come to the earthly realm. But he talks about the dreamscape as well and how we interact in this dreamscape, and in doing so, we have to stick to these four agreements. But there's
yes.
Similar to the four bodhisattva vows, which I think is really interesting, considering that this is a Native American indigenous person, but they have such similar beliefs to a culture clear across the world from them, from another time even, but the same concepts of walking through the dreamscape and focusing on those four
yeah.
to do it. It's the one mind, I guess.
Has nothing to do with calling it Buddhist or indigenous or anything else. We just do that because it's convenient for us to have categories and put things in them. Then we become identified with those terms and words as though they're something that have anything to do with the way it actually is.
In my understanding, there are correlations across humanity that don't really differ aside from the means of explaining it or creating imagery or creating diagrams and texts and scriptures and all kinds of things to organize ourselves in order to remember or evolve or to understand our purpose here, et cetera, et cetera. And I find very interesting things about what I see as a corollary between, you know, Buddhism and its origins and, you know, indigenous populations, Inuit, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I really, you know, at the heart of it, I don't really see any differences at all in the heart of it. I see differences in cultures and the scriptures or lack of scripture and et cetera, et cetera. But the what I see as the core of all of it is we're suddenly here, human, and not knowing what's going on, and there's a nature out of which we came, and we're trying to understand that, or we're trying to be a part of that, and we're here expressing this thing, you know.
Yeah, so an important part of all that, the dreamscape. You said earlier, when I said, are you tending your garden? You said, the garden is tending me. If the garden is tending you, then have you chosen what to plant? Have you chosen your particular garden? Because we each have to choose our garden. He chose his garden. That's what that was that you just described. It was his garden. It was a dreamscape, but the dreamscape was leading him to understanding his nature.
Mm-hmm.
Your garden leads you to understand your nature. Don't abandon it. So when you take on a path, whatever that path is, call it Buddhism, call it a Native American tradition, call it Christianity, you know, use it to get to your original nature. And if it's not working, choose something else. But, you know, you got to give it a fair shot. In other words, you got to tend the garden.
Mm.
You've got to be who you are right now in this dreamscape. As you, not someone else. So it doesn't matter what someone else is doing, is what I'm saying, to get there. It matters what you're doing to get there. I appreciate the sharing, and I think you're correct. You know, isn't that wonderful how all these different ways of getting there work? But you can get kind of lost in all that. It's like people in our culture like to try out things. So they try out this over here, like to go, like you say, go to a different candy store. You know, try this candy, try that candy. But they're not really tending their garden. You are a unique being in the way you are put into this experience. Whether you believe in reincarnation and all that stuff or not, doesn't matter. You're unique. So your garden is going to be different than anyone else's. And it's important to acknowledge that. It's like, yes, there's no self. Someone would come up, may come along and say, well, it's just a dream, so it doesn't matter. Well, but it does matter because it's your dream. So dream it the way you're going to dream it to get to original nature.
Recently, you know, you're talking about the garden and all that. I kind of see it as a path through life, you know, like the middle way, right? Or whatever. Yeah.
No, that's correct. The yeah. middle way. Sure.
Yeah.
Still your garden.
But that's just it. I feel like a lot of my life was spent kind of just wandering around the garden.
Yes.
It's been really recently that I feel like I'm finally out of the roses and the weeds and all that other stuff and really just on a path and like seeing the path and really getting into my stride on the path, you know, like. I got this now. I'm still going to go off in the weeds sometimes. I'm going to forgive myself when I do, but it feels like now that I'm tending to the garden, I'm separating things, I'm seeing it a little more clearly. It's like, there it is.
It's different for each of us. So it's not the same as what I might do or what I think is important. It's what you think and how you go through it. But still, there is a path, like you say. There is a one-pointedness towards waking up, towards being your total, complete, original, authentic self, and not someone else, not trying to become someone, but being who you already are.
So to tie both of those together, from what I'm taking away from this conversation, with the path reminds me of the 10 pictures of the ox, like the
yes.
sages,
yeah.
and that path can be used to create your garden or your dreamscape. Use the path as a guide for lucid dreaming to make your own.
There's a point where the whole dreamscape disappears. That's not our ordinary everyday experience. That's sort of what's referred to as nirvana or beyond life and death. But we're dealing in life and death here. I mean, let's be realistic. This is where we're hanging out. So we have to deal with that. It's there for us right now. You know, I have to eat. I have to sleep. I have to take care of myself. I have to take care of those that are in my life. I have to, you know, I have to be the best person I can. I have to ask, how can I help? All these things, right, are part of our experience, that I'm not just in it for myself, so to speak. Again, language. So many different ways to interpret what I'm saying. Just to set the tone. But sound transcends so much of our language. When you're not caught up in, you know, the lyrics so much, but the vibration of it, you know, that's universal. Isn't it wonderful? All the beautiful sand on Siesta Key. If 1,000 bodhisattvas were to walk across it, it wouldn't care. If a bird shits in it, it doesn't care. Somebody puts out their cigarette butt there, it doesn't care. So there's that.
We like to build on things, don't we? Make stuff out of stuff.
Yeah.
That is a funny thing. I just read this morning, and they just said that. And it was a quote from Marcel Proust. And he said, best travel is not to strange exotic lands, but to see things from somebody else's perspective.
Very good. That's a perfect way to end our talk today. Thank you.